Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Shintaro Higashi Show with Peter Yu. Today, we have a very special guest, Jimmy Pedro. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure, Shintaro.
Yeah, everyone knows Jimmy, but first and foremost, thank you to our sponsors. We have Jason Levon, also Judo TV. You could use discount code Shintaro for 10% off. And this entire episode series with Jimmy Pedro, who is owner of Fuji Mats, Fuji Gear, all this stuff. Fuji Sports is also in the game. Also, discount code Shintaro. For those of you who don't know, Jimmy is probably one of the most decorated Olympian slash judokas in the history of the United States, right? So thank you very much, Jimmy, for being on here.
Awesome. I'm a pleasure to be here today, Shintaro. I'm excited about the conversation and to talk to your audience.
Awesome. So first and foremost, you are known for this super diligent work ethic, Olympian, world champion, producing Travis and Kayla and all these American youths to be, you know, current in the IJF circuit. But I want to talk a little bit more about, like, the everyday judoka. The majority of guys who are listening to the podcast aren't going to be Olympians, aren't trying to make an Olympic team, right? We'd like to think that they are, but, you know, majority of us are hobbyists who listen in, right? So I want to take it from the top. What is your definition of judo?
Ooh, definition of judo. It's the vehicle that we use and that we train in that helps change people's lives forever. It made me who I am, right? So regardless of the accomplishments that are made in the sport, whether national champion, world team member, Olympic team member, or just everyday judoka, we know that there are inherent benefits from anybody who sticks with the sport more than a year or two, right? So if you're a judoka for life, then you sort of have certain behavior. You have an affinity towards Japan and learning Asian culture. You have, you know, obviously been disciplined enough to come to judo practice, whether it's for fun, recreation, whatever. You found a level of interest and excitement in judo because it trains your mind and your body. And it helps make you a better person, right? Because you're respectful when you walk in the dojo. You're respectful to the other people. You're learning a martial art, which is different for everybody, right? It's not something that we're born to do. It's something that takes a lot of time, energy, and effort to perfect. So we're putting ourselves to test every day, trying to learn and make our bodies move in different ways. We're getting physically stronger. We're getting mentally tougher. We're getting in shape. We're losing weight. We're feeling good. We're a sense of a community. And at the end of the day, for the kids, it helps them become better athletes. It gives them more confidence. They don't get picked on at school as much. They're able to focus a little bit more, work towards their goals. But most importantly, they become good people. And I think that that's really, really important to understand is that, you know, anybody who does the sport long term, it definitely gives them those tools that'll help them succeed in life.
Wow, that's a great answer. So do you find judo fun or do you still train sometimes? Like, what are the most enjoyable parts of judo for you specifically? Like, did you like training, gripping, figuring stuff out, watching judo? Like, do you love those things?
Well, so for me, it was a goal, right? My goal was to make the Olympic team. That was my first goal in the sport is, you know, once I was national champion, it was to make the Olympic team and be the first ever from my school, be one of my father's students to ever make the Olympic team. So for me, it was a chore. It was a challenge. It was a goal. It was something that I worked really, really hard for. But at the same time, I didn't love it all the time. You know, it was difficult and I had to push myself all the time. But once I had success, I loved the feeling of success. I love that accomplishment of that goal. And so once I made my first Olympic team and I didn't medal, my goal became I've got a medal in the Olympics. And that became my next goal. Then it was, okay, I took a bronze medal. I want to win a gold medal. And, you know, it was always pushing that goal to the next level. And I was chasing that dream of being number one in the world in the sport. And I did that once in 99. And it was the best feeling in the world. When you accomplish your lifelong goal, like, there's nothing better, you know, than doing that. So that was my mission. That was my goal. But what makes it fun, I love the time on the road with the guys. I love being with the team. Yeah. It wasn't necessarily the competitions. It was training in Japan and having unique experiences, going to the police dojo in the morning, having some lunch at a sushi joint or a ramen noodle shop. It was coming back and watching a movie with the guys or playing cards, you know, at all hours of the night. And it was going to venture out in Japan and, you know, see the sights and go shopping at the Mizuno store or Okachimachi to buy the cheap stuff at the flea markets. And, it was really the bonding with the guys is what I remember the most. That was the most fun. And I can tell you that the most fun I ever had in my life competing in the sport of judo was when I was on TSV Abensberg's German team.
The pro team.
It was really fun fighting in the team tournaments because you'd fly all the way from the United States to Germany or to Paris or to Russia or wherever it was for one match. Mm. I'd only fight against one guy.
Yeah.
You know, but we'd have a 7-man team and it was our team against their team. And being a professional in the sport was that was a lot of fun being part of that team.
Let's talk a little bit about that because a lot of listeners don't know that the TSV Abensberg, the Judo Pro League, right? So can you tell us a little bit more about that Judo Pro League?
Yeah, so every, I don't say every team, but a lot of the countries have a professional team and they have a club that's sponsored by a bunch of individuals and their goal is to make their team the strongest and best possible to go win their national championships. And once they win their national championships, they qualify for the European Cup, which is the best team in all of Europe. And all these teams pick players from around the world, you know, and ask them, hey, will you compete for our team? For me, it happened to be TSV Abensberg, which is a German team. And at the time, they were one of the best teams in Europe. But our team was made up of world champions, Olympic medalists, you know, from Hungary, from Greece. Iliadis was on the team.
Nice.
Nuno Delgado from Portugal. Yeah. We had guys from Estonia, Spain. Didn't matter. They got a bunch of the best guys in the world. No. We represented Germany, and we competed against, you know, a team from Russia or a team from Romania. And every year they'd have a European Club Cup, and the best team in Europe would fight team against team until there's a champion.
So was there like a season? Like it'll be like March to June, like every month that you would have one competition and like a win-loss record, this and that? Or like what would it be like the NBA here? Or what would the
each national federation was a little bit different, but in Germany they have a Bundesliga, which is the German league, and each team in Germany, there's probably 20 teams, I'd say, in Germany, and they all compete in a season competition, and so they compete, and then the big people with the best records, they get to go to the semifinals and the finals. So it's the best four teams in Germany compete head to head, bracketed tournament. When you win the national championship, you then qualify to go to the European Club Cup, which is usually the end of the year, sometime in December. They'll bring all the best teams in Europe together, and they'll compete for the European title.
Nice. That sounds so fun.
That was awesome, Chantal. Yeah. We you know, we'd fly all the way to Romania for one team match, stay in a hotel.
Yeah.
These guys love to have fun after the tournament. It was all about, you know, enjoying yourself and having a lot of fun. And man, I made friends for life.
For sure. And that like team camaraderie stuff, that goes a long way. I mean, I know a lot of our guys who don't compete at that international stage, but even like the regional tournament, everyone gets in a car, go to the Pedro Cup or something like that, that car ride up there and then having dinner afterwards. That's really the fun thing that most people can do, right?
Right. It's the bonding. That's the thing that makes judo fun and keeps people in the sport is when you do things together with your team. Those are the memories that last a lifetime. Those are the friendships. That last a lifetime as well. You know, and I do encourage, you don't necessarily have to compete at the highest level to really enjoy the sport. Or you don't have to compete at all for that matter.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you want to challenge yourself and compete, then go to some local tournaments and go with a group of guys and make it a fun thing that you do socially. And make sure to spend the night, you know, overnight at the place and the next day go sightseeing and have some fun.
Definitely. So what do you think about the guys, like, let's just say, what percentage of your dojo competes, like, in competition? Do you say?
Very few. So I have over 300 judo players at my dojo. When I say judo players, I'm including, like, kids that are 4, 5, 6 years old, all the way up to guys that are in their 70s, right?
Yeah.
Of those 300 judo players at my school, I probably have about 25 that actually compete. The rest of them are recreational. They come twice a week, maybe three times. You know, they're on path to become a black belt in the sport, right? If they come consistently for a period of whatever, 6 years or 8 years, whatever it takes to get there, they're on path to become a black belt. And even starting at the young ages, we go from white belt all the way up to like a high level purple, which I consider like a junior level black belt. People stay in the sport twice a week, learn, have fun. They don't have to compete to get it, to get that rank. They just have to prove that they can do the techniques, that they know the names, and, you know, they can do it with proficiency.
Yes. So there's a non-competitor path in your gym.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
But they have, so if they want to become a black belt without competing, then they have to give back in another area. They either have to learn how to become a teacher and assist with the classes and help the other kids as they get up in front of the class, and they'll actually lead the class and teach with the head instructor watching, giving feedback on how to make the technique better or what they could have done better to teach the technique to the kids. Or they have to learn to referee or volunteer at events and learn the scoring system and the bracket system. They have to know more than just techniques to become black belt, right? Because it's about having knowledge and helping others. Yeah.
And I think your dojo is sort of on the high end of percentage of competitors. I always say like 5 to 10%. And if you have 25 guys in a 300-person dojo, that's like close to 10%, you know? So how can the 90% of guys, 90 to 95% of guys who are going to the dojo, learning judo, who are probably majority of the listeners here or the majority of guys watching YouTube and watching my judo channel and your channel too, where can they find the fun in judo if they're not going out to competitions, like from a day-to-day perspective?
I think it's about challenging yourself. I think it's about learning new stuff. You know, I highly recommend you seek a dojo that's very technical or that puts a lot of emphasis on teaching the sport and teaching the movements of the sport as opposed to teaching people how to be competitors and how to randori. I think people have fun when it's social. So, for example, what I do at my academy for the students is I don't make anybody randori, right? Mm. So we go to practice 45 minutes to an hour. It's learning, it's doing some exercises and warming up. It's learning some new technique, you know, for that month. We've got certain techniques that we teach that month. And it goes in progression, right? We learn the basic stuff, then we learn the intermediate, then we evolve to the advanced, we go on to another technique. But all of what they're doing and they're learning is they're drilling. They're doing uchikomis, they're doing repetitions, they're doing moving uchikomis. They're getting a great workout and they're learning the skills, but they're not doing it in a combat way. They don't have to do the randori training to get better at the sport. And I think that takes out an element of risk. It takes out an element of people that are scared to randori might get hurt and have to go to work the next day. They don't want to take that risk. But if you make the class where it's just all about exercise, fitness, learning the movements, learning the techniques, they get a great workout. They leave exhausted, but yet they didn't have any element of uncertainty where they might get injured, you know, and leave the randori as optional. Have a couple randori nights at the school. The people who want a randori can come and randori when they want to. But it's not mandatory as part of every class.
Nice. That's amazing. I think that's huge, you know, and I would have expected a different answer from you. Everybody's got to do randori. Everybody's got to do. But I love that. I love that. You know, is this kind of a new way of thinking for you?
It is. It's. I've been doing it for quite a few years now, so it's not new. And I think that's why our recreational adult program, we have 30, 35 guys on the mat every night from white belt to like green belt that are enjoying themselves. It's a chance to interact. It's more social. Yeah. It's not hardcore, bow in, don't ever talk during practice. Sometimes you put on music. It's more of a relaxed atmosphere. And it's fun. You know, and then they talk about what they're learning and they help each other. And it's a much better experience, I think, inside the dojo than running it like an academy that's, you know, geared towards competition.
Yeah. So what about like if I were to ask you who is some of the most inspirational guys for you that, you know, don't compete at a very high level, who are at your gym day to day, like who are those guys? Like if you were to, you don't have to say names or anything. You can, if you want, you know, give the guy props. Like what sort of profiles do you have in the gym that are like, hey, this guy, you know, is my guy.
So, you know, I've had some that have competed at a high level, but what I'm most important of is the pursuit, you know, the pursuit of excellence that they had. And it wasn't just in sport, but in their life, like a lot of them went on to become, you know, lawyers, they became doctors, they become district attorneys, they become, you know, chiefs of police departments. These guys have gone on to have successful careers. Yeah. And a lot of it, it was attributed to what you taught me on the mat, helped me. Yeah. I could do anything because I went through your judo training in your academy. I felt like I could do anything. I had that confidence in myself to go on to do bigger and better things. And
that's right.
You know, I bought into that message of use your mind to see what it is you want to do in your life, set your goals, and then don't settle for anything less than following through and challenging yourself to get there every day. You know, and so, you know, I've had some people have gone, graduated from MIT, go on and get their PhD. They're working in Washington, D.C. now. You know, maybe the kid walked in my door and he was either autistic or he had Asperger's, or they had some sort of disability, we'll say,
Yeah.
but they became super successful people, and those are the success stories that are far greater than the Olympic champions. And
Wow.
I have
Yeah.
dozens of those.
Yeah. So once they get through that system, right, they have successful lives, they learn the fitness and all the stuff, and they go through your system, and now they're black belts. What's left for them? You know, let's say like we talked a little bit about like 30 to 40 black belt judoka, right? What keeps them coming back? And you know, it's
Well,
true, like a lot of gyms lose these guys, and I feel like these are the most valuable guys because they spent so much time judo, they have so much information to share to the people. Like, how do we keep those guys, you think?
so it's making them feel part of the community, right? And I
Yeah.
think what I've done is I've created an opportunity for all of them to give back and help at the dojo. So I have guys
Yeah.
like John Silva. I don't know if you remember John Silva. John Silva's a black belt of mine. We
Yeah.
have a Steve Rumberg. We have George Pisimisis. We have Norm
Pessimist,
Windsor.
yeah.
We have a lot of people that became black belts, and that their training or their judo careers didn't end then. They still come back and they help. And what I do
Yeah.
is I have instructor training programs where once a month we get together and we learn the techniques and how I want them taught at the academy. And it continues their learning, but it makes them feel part of that community. And then they come up and they help teach the classes because they know what judo did for them. And like once a week, twice a week, they want to give back. So give them an opportunity to teach the younger generation, like the lessons that they learned, and they just pass it on to the next generation. And so all of those people are now teaching at my academy
Yeah.
with their teaching and leading their own classes. They get a sense of like pride. They have a sense of self-worth, and they're actually
Yeah.
like, I use that as a way to help them get their second degree black belt or their third degree black belt, right? Keep them in the sport, allow them to go to the local competitions and help the kids that are from their, that are coming out of their classes that want to compete. And it's making them just continue to feel a part of the community. And it doesn't necessarily
Yeah.
mean they have to come and do a hard randori's anymore.
True, true. Do you think there's a place for a competition to like have them showcase some of their techniques? Like I always talk about like a technique demonstration division, like Taekwondo does, you know? Taekwondo has one little segment where they do sparring, but that's like 3% of the whole tournament. Everyone does like demonstration boards, kata, all this other stuff. Do you think there's a place in judo for that, or is that something that you're like,
You know,
ah,
it's some,
don't want
it's
to deal with
some,
it?
it's something that the at the American Judo System, which is a program that Travis and I have founded, we have talked about even for kids having a division of kata, but not necessarily kata in the sense that you know it, where you have to do this
Yeah.
prearranged sets of movements in a specific
Yes.
way, but more think about it as if I was a white belt and I was just about to get my yellow, and the three throws that I know are like ogoshi and Koshigruma and Ippon Seinagi. Why couldn't we have two young kids come out, bow in, each person
Yeah.
demonstrates how to do a proper like Ippon Seinagi. They actually throw their opponent, they get back up, they each do one technique each, and then they get graded on that. And you would
Yeah.
actually like a white belt division or a green belt division, and
Yeah.
obviously the higher belt you are, the more proficient we expect you to be, but it would be a competition where they'd actually
Yeah.
demonstrate a set of techniques. Just to see how clean the technique was, and the position that they entered in, and the
Yeah.
control they had with the movement, and actually have testing on that and competitions on that.
Yeah, I would love to see that in the black belt division too, like a 1 minute freestyle back and forth where you're demonstrating skills. You know, for instance, like one of the things that I still teach to this day, what you do is when you put your left hand on the collar first and you close the window, and as they loop their hand back around to grab the collar, you close it, reach for that far sleeve, you shuffle step, and then when they go over to re-grab the collar, you do a two-step tie-o. You know that sequence that you do?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, but like you could teach it, and majority of the guys can't do it, but they could work on it over and over. And then they could demonstrate it, right? So
For
like
sure.
doing that in like the freestyle thing, hey, this is the Jimmy Pedro Tayo entry, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Something like that might be really. Are you surprised I knew that? I remember that. I've been hit with that so many times when I was training with
Oh,
you, so
so
it's just like
funny.
never really So like something like that might be great for guys like George Pissimissis or the black belts who give back to the community to be
For
able to
sure.
showcase some of their skills, like the unique ways they set up throws. And I think that's something that I would like to be involved with too, you know, one day. What do you
I
think
think it
about
would. I think that like doing like a figure. Think about like figure skating for a second, right? They
that?
go out and they do a short program, they do a long program. So you
Yeah.
figure out how
Yeah.
long. It's a 2 minute, 3 minute, whatever it is, and it's an opportunity to music with upbeat stuff. Think about like a flying ukemi demonstration with
Yeah.
combined with some self-defense skills, and you give points based on creativity, level of technique, originality, and you'd say, okay, this guy did that was amazing. And I bet you'd see some pretty creative things being done in the sport, which would really entertain the people in the audience. So you'd get more eyeballs on that than you do on the regular competition
Oh,
because there's more
100%.
things happening.
And then, you Instagram it, clip it, put it on Reels. People like the aesthetics of it. If there's colors, music, lights, whatever it is, you could kind of control a lot of those factors more as opposed to the competition. There's just one big throw. No one knows what exactly happened, right? So
There's way
that's a
more drama
really,
to it. When you bring music into it, it brings that element of drama, and you could hear like the drum beat building up to the big throw, and it'll be all choreographed. It would be amazing.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. So, with the American judo system, like, what is that about? A lot of us don't know about it. Now, when you sign up for a USA Judo membership, you automatically get an American judo system membership.
Membership, 1 year membership. So
I didn't even know about that, right?
I know that's
So,
the problem. Nobody knows about it, but it exists. So every single person, when they renew their United States USA Judo membership, they pay $100. That $100 payment, in addition to the secondary insurance and the opportunity to compete in events, it also gives you a free annual subscription to the AmericanJudo.com platform, and you get access to all of the techniques that I've done, Travis, we have Colton Brown, we have Israel Hernandez, all teaching from the basic shadow movement of the technique with no partner, all the way from beginner to advanced level combinations of every judo technique that we've shot so far. So Sayanagi, Taiyotoshi, Uchimata, Ochigari, all of those techniques exist on how to do it by yourself, how to do it with Uchikomi bands, and how to do it with your partner. Proper movement, proper Nagikomi, everything. In addition to a bunch of Neiwaza sequences that we've put on there, we have live classes every month where people can actually tune in live, ask questions. We answer the questions for you. It's all free as part of your USA Judo membership, and you get it for 1 full year, a subscription to American Judo.
So all the people who are listening now who have USA Judo memberships, they probably have it already, right? How
Yep,
do
they
they
do.
access it? Would they just go to AmericanJudo.com?
No, so they go through USA Judo, their website, their membership on the USA Judo platform. There'll be a link to the American Judo, and it's a single sign-on. So much like Google, where you have a single sign-on, username, password, that gives you access to the American Judo platform.
Nice. That's
They can
awesome.
watch all the videos, they can ask questions, they can we have live session, we have live coaching sessions, we have live technique sessions, and we have live classes that we do every month.
And if they're in need of gis, they could go to fujisports.com and use discount code Chintaro for 10% off.
Absolutely. We'd love them to come.
That's
the number
right.
one, the best destination in the United States for all your judo gis. We got Fuji, we got Mizuno, we got Nippon Gear, you name it, we have it online.
So you are definitely involved with Fuji. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because this whole thing is sponsored by Fuji now, and we're doing a 4-part series with you. If you guys have requests, you could always reach out to me. I want to hear Jimmy talk about this and that, right? What his favorite
Absolutely.
food is, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, tell
Yeah,
us a
so
little bit about Fuji.
FujiSports.com. I was a sponsored athlete, right? So when I was in the Olympics, I loved the Mizuno Judo Gis. Leah Hatashita, who is the owner of Hatashita Sports and Fuji Sports, she brought me on as a brand ambassador. She gave me my Judo Gis that I competed around the world in. After I got done my competitive years, I did a lot of seminars. I went around the country, teaching judo. A lot of people would ask me, hey, where can I get judo gis? I'd always refer them to Leah and go to Hatashita Sports and go get the judo gis. Then her and I became sort of official, a professional relationship where she actually like, hey, I want to hire you to, help me grow my sales, help me strategize the company, et cetera. In addition to passing all the leads to her, I started helping her develop her website and develop the brand Fuji as a separate entity from Mizuno and separate from Hatashita. So Fuji became our main brand, and ever since then, I've slowly like taken on more and more responsibility with the company to the point now where I own 50% of the company. Leah's a 50% owner. Together, we share in all the responsibilities to grow the brand. And right now, We are the number one destination for judo gis and, you know, judo apparel in the country. We're also the official sponsor of USA Judo. But we also give back to the sport, and we help
tons.
Sponsor all of our top athletes. You know, we have Jack Ionesco, we have Angelica Delgado, you know, Colton Brown, Adonis Diaz, Maria Laborde. Like, everybody that needs gis pretty much comes to us, and we help those athletes outfit them. They represent the brand. And it's a good way of giving back to the community.
Yes, definitely. So discount code Shintaro, go check it out. All right, let's bring it back just a little bit from like the old guy judo from 30 to 40 to youth judo, because you said on a separate occasion that youth is where we lose a lot of kids as well to baseball, soccer, cheerleading. Who knows what they're doing, the youth these days, but how do we keep those guys?
That's a really great question, Shintaro. I mean, first of all, we start now at my school younger than ever. So my daughter, Casey, she went to business school. She developed her own program called Crawl Martial Arts.
Nice.
It has to do with confidence and respect. And
it's
meant for toddlers. So she does a toddler program, and it starts the kids at like age two. So the parents actually come on the mat with the kid on a Sunday morning. It's like a 40-minute class. They do all these exercises. They use a teddy bear to learn the judo. The parent assists in the classes. They learn all the basic skills, right? Bowing, kneeling, seiza, anza, you know, some basic judo throws, hold downs. The parents get involved and help out. It's all station-based, so they spend a certain amount of time at each station learning a different skill, and then they go on their way. But most importantly, they're taught to respect the bear, you know, or their teddy bear that they train with.
Wow.
You know, they have to listen and pay attention. Kid-friendly music, that type of stuff.
So
we start them young. When you start them young, they tend to stay in the sport. Because by the time they're 4 or 5 years old, they have a good background. The parent says, wow, this is really changing my kid's life.
Yeah.
He's paying more attention, or she's paying more attention. She's listening to my instructions. She's getting some exercise. So they end up going into our little kid program.
Yeah.
So it becomes a feeder for our kids program. Then 5, 6-year-old, we call our tiny tigers. They get a special gi with a tiger on it. Now they're doing the class without the parent.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're starting to train and practice with other kids.
Yeah.
It's great for socialization, et cetera. But the main thing with keeping kids is making sure that they're succeeding. I think what too many clubs do is they focus on competition. And they take the kid from and pushing them into doing randori and pushing them to taking them to tournaments. And let's face it, when you go to a tournament, it's a bad experience. No matter what, it's a bad experience.
The
right?
worst.
You travel far away, don't know when you're going to compete, maybe compete against kids that are bigger, stronger, better than you are.
Yeah.
Maybe the referee is yelling at you that your gi's too big or you don't have the right color belt on. And it at the end of the day, the parents spend all this time, all this money, and it wasn't a great experience. So at my academy, I don't allow anybody to compete outside my dojo until they're ready. We do do in-house tournaments. So I'll have 60 to 100 kids on a Saturday do an in-house tournament. They're in and they're out in 2 hours.
Yeah.
They got 4 matches. They, you know, most likely got a medal because we usually do round robin groups of 4 people.
Yeah.
Type of thing, 4 or 5 people in every division. They have a great experience. They learned the rules. Nobody yelled at them. They had a pizza party afterwards. And they went home by noon. They started at 9. They went home by noon, and they had a blast.
Man.
So,
wow, that's incredible. Sign me up. I want to join that program.
You're just interested in the pizza shit, dog.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. That's great.
So I think it's about controlling the experience that people have at your academy will help keep them. And then when it gets to those teenage years, that's when we really lose kids, right?
Because teenagers
tend to like want to hang out with teenagers. They don't want to hang out with little kids, and they don't want to hang out with old guys like me or you. They
want
to hang out with people their age. So
you
have to have almost a teen-only class and actually have a teen socialization component to your dojo where the teens are going to tournaments together and competing together. They're going to training camps together if they're into competition. If they're not into competition, have like a special team of role models at your school where kids age 11 through 15, 16 can help like learn from the instructor, can help give back and teach at the school, and then have some responsibilities where maybe we do a parents' night out at the dojo, and the teenagers are there, the ones that are the chaperones, being part of that community, where they have some responsibility. Maybe it's a part-time job for them, where they're actually getting paid to babysit the kids that are part of the club. Like, finding ways to keep them involved is really important.
Yeah, definitely. That's great tips. Do you think there's a place for sort of like we talked briefly about this other day, like Division One, Division Two athletics, where there's rule modifications for certain people who may not be quite Rondori ready, but maybe like an extended Nwaza time period or bend techniques to kind of like bridge that gap between like doing technique demonstration and then doing full blown Rondori in competition, like sort of the middle ground where people can kind of like limp in as like, let's just say someone who started in their 30s, who worked themselves up to be a black belt by the time they're 38 or something like this.
Yeah, I actually think that there's a bigger audience out there for those types of people than there are the competitors, right? Yeah. The true competitors are out there to win. And that's the problem with judo, yeah. Not just judo in the United States, but judo in the world. We focus on having one champion. There's one world champion every year, and that's it, right? That's it.
Yeah.
And the same with the national team. There's like one national champion, and that's it. And nobody really cares. Internationally, they don't care about anybody but the best person. But in reality, there's 15 people behind that best person that would love the opportunity to compete around the world, to have that experience, but they're not allowed to because they're not on the national team, right? And the same with this country, like when black belts go to the local tournaments, they don't want to compete against the guy that's winning the nationals. If they're 40 or they're 35, they don't want to compete against that person. There should be a B-level circuit.
Yeah.
Even in this country, if you're on the if you've placed in the national championships before, you can't compete in this division at any of the local tournaments. You have to compete in the elite division. But there should be a regular black belt division, not to say for novice people, but people who don't compete on the national level should have their own division. It would encourage more people to compete in the event.
Yeah.
And they think they'd have a chance to win because everybody's around the same skill level.
Yeah. Do you remember the ladder tournament back in the day?
Yeah.
That was the same concept, right?
Yep.
They should have a series of ladder competitions at these things where it's like you can potentially compete in this thing. You don't have to compete against anyone who's a killer. You know, even like the international guys that come from Russia that live here now, unloading trucks, going in. They used to be 13th in the world, and now all of a sudden he's smoking the local black belts.
Right.
You know, like they could be sheltered from that a little bit, right?
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Realistically, there should be like an open division, an elite division for the the national ranked people or people that competed internationally before. They have their own elite division. And then at the local competitions, it could be brown and black belt combined.
Yeah,
you know
it could
what I mean? But at the same time, it's for people that, you know, have been black belt for less than a couple of years.
Yeah.
That have never competed. There should be like a system of you've never medaled at the national championships. You've never competed internationally. You haven't been on an Olympic or world team. And this is the division for you guys.
Yeah.
And there's you nothing wrong with it.
Nobody
wants to go into, like, none of us would enter a track and field race if the first guy we had to race against was Carl Lewis.
We
have no chance. We're not even going to enter the starting block. And that's how some of these people feel the local tournament. They don't want to be embarrassed when they show up and they get the guy from Russia first round.
They
want to go against people where it's a competitive, we can learn, they can learn, and we don't know who's going to win.
Yes, that's always the exciting thing. Should that have a different rule set?
It could. I personally think that the sport of judo should be about throwing and pinning and arm barring, and you know, it should be about the waza.
Yes.
We should like get rid of all the stepping out of bounds penalties. We should get rid of all of
that's interesting. Yeah, tell me more about that.
Well, if you think about it, right? I mean, we have a defined mat area just for safety reasons. It really has nothing other than safety.
Yeah.
And of course, somebody that's running out of bounds or avoiding action, you can penalize them. But if somebody accidentally steps out while they're doing actual waza and both people are trying to throw, who cares if 1 foot went out of bounds or 2 feet went out of bounds? Yeah. Like, if I'm avoiding action, you should penalize me. But if I accidentally step out or it's questionable whether the guy held me out, there's no penalty for that.
Yeah.
You know, and there should be no penalties for like accidentally grabbing inside the sleeve. What we do for American Judo for all of the kids tournaments and the novice players, we give no penalties. You know, we don't penalize. Yeah. You have to win by throwing or pinning your opponent. There's no penalties.
In the American Judo system?
We'll warn the kids and say, hey, kid, you stepped out of bounds. You really can't step out of bounds. Don't do that again.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, you reached inside the sleeve. You can't do that. Just try to stay on the outside of the sleeve. It's more educational.
But the
person who wins the tournament had to throw the other person or pin him to win the match. And to me, that's more important than somebody who got three shidos.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's the worst. You know?
You know, and now the way they have with the accidentally touching your head on the floor, you got Hansu Komaki, when you just threw the guy for Wazari, your opponent, it's like the dumbest rule that they have right now.
Yeah. What about like safety stuff, like Tani Atoshi, drop Sanagi should be banned for little kids? Do you have any of those things? Like, I saw recently this Russian kid literally suplex a kid onto the neck, 9 years old. And I was like, oh my God. And the other kid is 1,000% without a doubt quitting judo after this.
Right, you know what I mean?
I'm like, man, this is not good for the sport at all whatsoever. And people are going nuts. You know, it's like, what? Like, should we restrict that kind of a thing to help judo grow?
I think we absolutely should, especially when you're talking about like novice level tournaments or developmental tournaments. I think if you're going to compete in national championships, junior nationals, it's at the rules. Not totally IJF rules.
Yeah.
Because I still don't believe in giving someone a Hansu Komaki for grabbing a leg, for example.
Yes.
You know, that used to be the old rule. Same thing with touching your head on the mat. If it's a blatant head dive, Hansu Komaki. But if you accidentally touch your cheek and throw the guy for Wazari with Uchimata, you should get the Wazari. Like, I'm sorry, but that rule should not be passed down. But at the developmental tournaments, the local tournaments, we should remove dangerous techniques and not allow them for the safety and so that people stay in the sport and they can actually, like, develop their judo.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, I completely agree with you 100%. And if we're doing something like this, how do we make judo more accessible to, like, the average viewer? You know, also Judo TV is now sponsoring us too. So if you go to judotv.com, Shintaro discount code also, 10% off, 10% off everything, right? But how do we make judo more accessible for the average viewer, right? So like if you're a guy, you know, you're the 90% of the judo players that don't compete at all, but they're like, oh man, you know, I do judo, I'm a green belt, I'm getting engaged. Like how can they be more involved watching, do you think?
Well, judotv.com live streams all the international events around the world, right?
Yeah.
So you can follow all of our athletes live. The IGF does a fantastic job making our sport accessible to the general public now, right?
Yeah.
So you can watch every event that's on the world circuit live anytime, anywhere you want. So that's fantastic. I think in this country, some of the USA Judo events are now live streamed, so you can watch. But unfortunately, the quality of the, you know, the quality of the view and the delays in the competition make it really painful.
Difficult to watch. Even like Flow Grappling, who sort of like have the market on Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's like, you know, knowing which mat to watch and the break in the time. I don't know if you ever watched any Flow Grappling live stream events with BJJF. It's tough.
It's not a
right?
great experience.
No. No.
The IJF is far superior. The judotv.com is a far superior experience.
Yeah.
You know who's competing exactly when. They give you the 4 or 5 matches ahead of time. You know when they're going to be competing, and that's fantastic.
And you can retroactively watch, you know, guys, hey, who, you know, first round, second round, you could pick and choose the matchups that you want to watch, and they have placements for all the scores that were had and then all the penalties that were had, so you could just watch just the live sections. You know,
you could watch any scoring moment. You can watch
any scoring moment. Yeah. You could just literally watch those and blow through a match in like less than 45 seconds and then be like, wow, that was amazing. Let me see how he did the next round and then see like a dude that I've never heard of, like go back and watch that guy, you know?
Yeah.
So it's so good.
That's the
right?
best way to tune in. If you want to watch like high level judo and you want to watch it efficiently, I'd say go to judotv.com and you can actually click on every athlete. And you can see every event they competed in, and every match is all also saved in their database.
Yeah.
So you can see their win-loss record. You can see what matches they won, they lost.
Yeah.
Fast forward right to the point where they scored each other or they lost the match.
Man.
And just see all the results in the scoring
moments.
Dude,
too bad they didn't have this when you were competing, huh?
I wish.
Right? Wouldn't that be amazing? But like, all right, let's see how Jimmy beat that Russian dude back the, you know, when this thing, right?
Yeah,
that would have
been
so
been
cool.
amazing.
Yeah,
I would have loved to have grown up in this moment where the media, judo's accessible. I think if you look at the sport of wrestling, the sport of wrestling now is more accessible than it ever was before. And the same with judo. And it where it couldn't survive before was it didn't have the media dollars to command being on national television, right?
Yeah.
But now through these online platforms, you don't need the media dollars. You just need the audience. And if they have the audience, they can live stream. And now it's just all these obscure sports that have a huge following now are accessible to the fans.
Yeah. So if you're watching judo sort of as a beginner or intermediate, is there like a tip for them? Like, how should they approach watching a judo match? Just like the everyday judo guy. Not like high-level competitor, like, oh, he's right versus left. He has one attack to the weak side. He does this many drops, that many, you know. Not like that, but just like for the average guy watching.
I think the most important thing is to watch, like, the posture with which the athletes play. Mm. Like, the way they move and how they yeah. move is important, right? Where they put their hands. Not say gripping sequences, but, like, look at where their hand position is or their body yeah. position and how they stand before they attack or before they make a big throw. And you'll notice yeah. certain like tendencies. You'll see like they'll break down that space and they'll get close before they make the attack, or they'll take the inside position before they make the attack, you know, and look yeah. at what posture they're in and what direction they were moving that dictate what throw they were going to do. Right. So if yeah. the guy's like tugging, and the other guy's pulling back, you'll see like a nice Oji guy, for yeah. example. Like, try to understand like why the technique worked and what were some of the keys to making it successful. See if you can nice. Pick that point out.
Yeah, that's great. Do you still train, Jimmy?
So I do. I just started again. So when I was like 42, I trained all the way up until I was like 42 years old. Did all the randoris with all
How
the
old are you now?
Now I'm 53.
53? You stopped doing judo 11 years ago?
I did. Randori. I stopped doing randori 11 years ago.
Is that right?
I tore my hamstring.
And oh,
when I tore
okay.
my hamstring, it took like 6-9 months to get over that hamstring injury. And I just yeah. like fell out of practice. And then I tried to like work out again.
Yeah.
But then I had like a hernia.
Mm,
and I
yeah.
thought I tore my groin, but it was like yeah. an ingroinal hernia.
Yeah.
And that took a while to heal. And then I just Ooh. Started like losing interest and I couldn't move yeah. properly during training, so I just yeah. stopped.
Because I remember when I was there in 2011, you were still doing judo randori with like me and everybody.
Yeah, that's
right?
what we just. That's so, about when I stopped, right around that time.
Wow. Oh,
so,
lucky for
but,
me.
But recently,
yeah.
I was so frustrated with my kids. How don't you guys understand how to do certain things?
Yeah.
So the only way sometimes is to show them.
Yeah.
So I started grabbing my, you know, 66, 73 kilo kids at the yeah. dojo. I said, we're going to start randori again.
Oh,
and I actually
wow.
loved it. I had a yeah. blast. I was exhausted.
Yeah.
And I made them tired too. So I felt good. And actually, I'm having a lot of fun with it. I love yeah. how sore I am after.
Yeah.
I love the feeling the next day after I've done a good hard randori.
Yeah.
My dad keeps telling me, hey, do every other round. Why are you trying to do every round? You're not in shape to do every round. I'm
yeah,
like,
really?
I'm
that's
gonna
what
be.
Big Jim saying that? yeah. Really? Well, that's interesting.
Because he keeps telling me, he said, listen, I'm not calling the ambulance. When you're down for the count, I'm not calling the ambulance.
Man, so when did you start doing randori again?
Just about a month ago.
Wow, so super recent.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole time you were lifting weights, running, all this stuff, right?
Yeah, staying fit, right? I work
yeah.
out, I try to work out every day, Shintaro, whether it's
yeah.
running, whether it's, you know, getting a kettlebell workout in or doing,
yeah.
like, you know, something goofy. I'm always
yeah.
trying to do
are
something.
Are you on a program usually? Like, you go from program to program or
yeah.
what kind of
Mostly
thing do you
right
usually
now,
do?
Mostly right now, I'm doing a lot of, like, mobility exercises and, you know, kettlebell
yeah.
and mace. I use a mace. I do,
yeah.
like, medicine ball stuff. Like,
yeah.
just trying to stay as, like, mobile as I can.
Yeah, I remember like 2 or 3 years ago, you got jacked out of nowhere, right? You were into the powerlifting for a little bit?
I was doing a lot of squats and cleans
yeah.
and stuff
yeah.
like that, but that heavy lifting really just takes a toll on your body.
Because you're saying something
50s.
About your back, right?
Now in my 50s, I can't do that stuff anymore. It's got to be
yeah.
more like, you know, really focused on movement.
Yeah. So I remember when you made your comeback after you initially stepped away and then came back. Was it Stara Cup that you made your comeback?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember that?
That was
See?
My first competition.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It wasn't
you know
easy,
why?
Right?
My father, Big Jim, my father, he basically said to me, he said, hey, if you're coming back again, you're going to have to do things a whole lot differently than
yeah.
you did last time. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, you're going to have to get hungry.
Yeah,
I want yeah. you to like go to every competition possible
yeah.
between now and the Olympics. You just got to get a ton of matches in.
Yeah.
So I went to Starrett. I had like five or
yeah.
six matches there, you know, and I just tournament after tournament after tournament. I just went everywhere.
Wow.
So
it's like that now.
Yeah. No, but I love getting back on the mat, training again. It is a lot of fun. Don't get me wrong. It hurts.
Oh,
judo
yeah.
hurts. It's,
oh, definitely.
At the highest level when these kids are like ripping and gripping and they're trying to, you know, they're training twice a day all the time. Their body's
yeah.
fit. You know, all these kids feel strong now, right?
Especially so you're going with competitive training. Kids, not just like Gen Pop, regular fun kids, but like kids that are training?
Yeah, the kids that were on the junior world team, kids made the junior world team this year, or won our junior nationals or high school nationals, like those types of kids I'm training with. I'm training with the Olympic level guys, but
Do you try new things, or do you like not really try new things? You just kind of
I
like
do
bring it
whatever
back
works
yourself.
now,
Wow. That's
Shintaro.
awesome, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow, man. Jimmy Pedro. Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. All right. So, guys, thank you for tuning in. This is going to wrap up this first episode. It's going to be like a 3-4-part series, right?
Awesome.
Today's whole theme was everyday judoka, and we got to hear your thoughts about competition, everyday judo guys, because everyday judo guys are the ones that are, right, doing it for the love of the sport. They're not doing it for, right, themselves, the winning, the goals, the Olympic, all the stuff. It's just every day. I love judo, right?
They're doing it really to get back in shape, to
Yep.
do a fun way to get back in shape, right?
Yeah.
A place of socialization where they can meet like-minded people, right? They don't have to go to the bar and drink
Yeah.
beer or whatever it is. Like they can actually like have a social night. The wife says, "Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
When you come back from judo, you're so happy. Keep going,
Yeah,
you know."
yeah, yeah.
So it's all for those reasons, right? And also
Yeah.
learning some self-defense, learning some moves to protect myself and be able to handle
Yeah.
myself in a situation. But also get fit and have fun, I think is the bottom line.
Nice. And if you need gear, fujisports.com, discount code Shintaro. And do you have a last message for the 99% of guys who do judo, who are not trying to make an Olympic team, but like for the everyday guy listening, doing judo, maybe even jiu-jitsu or wrestling, what would be your advice to those guys?
I'd say finish what you started. So if you came to judo to be a black belt, then stick it through. Show up twice a week, keep learning, keep pushing your sensei, asking what you need to do to get your next rank, and go to the level of black belt. If you came to get in shape and you set a weight loss goal for yourself that, hey, at some point I want to get down to 185 pounds, whatever your goal was, stick with the sport. It'll help you get there and you'll have a lot of fun. At the end of the day, you'll be a much better person for it because you'll have committed to something, you finished what you started, and you'll be proud of yourself in the end.
Awesome. Jimmy, where can all these guys find you?
I'm at my Instagram is Jimmy Pedro USA. And
Nice.
obviously, my websites are fujisports.com or fujimats.com. And don't forget,
Nice.
if you want to learn more judo in a fun way and learn it from the ground all the way up, AmericanJudo.com.
AmericanJudo.com. Thank you,
All right.
Jimmy.
Thank you so much, Intar. I enjoyed today.
Thank you.
Keep up the great work.